Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us again for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim. And this week, we're happy to have with us Dr. Robert Quinn. He's been a professor at the University of Michigan Ross School of Business. He's been a researcher. He has written best-selling books. He's published over 18 books in his career, and he has spoken to over half of the Fortune 500. He is going to be talking about purpose-driven leadership, and just a timely subject during this time in our history. And this is a two-part conversation. We're going to continue the conversation next week, but looking forward to our conversation with Bob. So happy to have Bob Quinn joining us. And Bob, I guess, first off, can you give us just a little bit of your story, your personal story, and kind of how you've gotten to where you are today?
Well, I grew up on the East Coast in a small town, went to university. I became very interested in the notion of change. That one word was a fanatic obsession of mine. So I studied change, and then I got my PhD, and I did research on change. I did consulting on change. I taught change. And that word became the planet around which I've orbited most of my life.
Well, we're in a very unusual time in our history, and everybody's kind of in the same boat, and a lot of people are sitting at home and working at home and doing everything at home right now. And there's a lot of stress and anxiety, and people are trying to stay positive, but it's pretty challenging in this time. Talk a little bit about the importance of staying positive, and just what are some things that people can be doing as far as if they're new leaders or up and coming leaders, that they can stay in a positive mindset.
It's interesting, the notion of crisis. It naturally creates anxiety. And yet we have various traditions that told us for a long time that crisis is also opportunity. But it's very hard to see or believe that when you're in the middle of one. But I think it is absolutely opportunity. And it's a personal opportunity, and it's a collective opportunity. We finished a book a few months ago. It was published, and we did interviews a couple of years ago with CEOs of purpose-driven companies. So these are value-driven, highly, highly successful companies. It was amazing how many of those leaders traced their key development back to the year 2008. Mm. Now, 2008 was the Great Recession, and almost every business leader went into crisis. And many of them came out the way they went in. But all of these people came out very differently than the way they went in. And it's in crisis that we're forced to, because we don't know what to do, we're forced to get out of our ego and ask questions about who am I, what's my identity, what's my destiny, what's my purpose. And that's the beginning of a profound life change. If someone negotiates that effectively, they develop the capacity to help other people move through uncertainty, crisis, so forth. They become leaders. A manager is not a leader. Holding a position, you can be CEO of a company, that doesn't make you a leader. Holding a position is not being a leader. A leader is a person of influence, and they're not meeting the criteria of leadership until someone's willingly following them. And so this is a time of great, great opportunity for people trapped at home to do work they normally don't want to do and figure out who they are, what their greatest strengths are, what their mission is, what their contribution is, and then take that to the world. And you will see many, many people do that in coming months. But the more we do that, the more it changes things. And suddenly we go from anxiety and fear to purpose and confidence. And we function differently biologically. It's a huge difference.
So any personal stories that you could share as far as around kind of finding that purpose and people that you've worked with, and you've done a lot of consulting with executives as well as other leaders?
Sure. I think that it's helpful to start probably at the personal level. You know, I've written a lot about what I call the fundamental state of leadership. It's normal for you and I to be comfort-centered. It's normal for us to be externally directed, worried about what other people think, to be self-focused, and to be internally closed. That's a natural, normal state that I gravitate to, and so does everyone else. But it's possible to transform ourselves in real time. And I've written a lot about four questions that'll do that. The first question is, what result do I want to create? The moment I ask that question and answer it, now answering it's the hard part, we usually don't know what result we want to create. And we hear the question and think, oh, I ask that all the time. I'm a busy, productive person. No, we don't. Most of the time, you and I are asking the question, what do I want? Now, there's a big difference between what I want and what result do I want to create. Because what I want is to be comfortable. I don't want to be in uncertainty. I don't want to be in a situation where I'm embarrassed because I don't meet your expectations. So I want to be comfortable. I want this problem, whatever it is, to go away. When I ask the question, what result do I want to create, it instantaneously changes sociology. Sociology says people are path dependent. They're determined by their past. Now, you only need to spend a few minutes to say that's an impeccable assumption. It's absolutely true. The past determines the future. But if we ask the question, when does the future determine the present? I meant the past determines the present. When does the future determine the present? That's an interesting question. Seems like a heretical question. But the moment you and I know the answer to the question, what result do I want to create, suddenly the future is determining the present. Everything changes. The second question is, am I internally directed? Because all of us are hypocrites. You know, I have a set of values way up here and they look like this. Then I have behaviors down here and they look like this. And there are these big gaps. And the way I handle those is I bury them. Because they stink. I don't want to smell them. And we go through life like that. But the moment you take the top off that garbage can and you take a deep breath and smell that hypocrisy, it's such a terrible stench that you're immediately motivated to close one of those gaps. And when you close one of those gaps, you suddenly feel good about yourself. And the moment you feel good about yourself, you look at others and you see potential in them you didn't see before, because you're realizing potential in you that wasn't being realized. The third question is, am I other focused? Do I understand the deepest needs and interests of the other people in the equation? Are they just objects like economic theory says they are? Or are they human beings with needs and interests? And do I understand those, and am I oriented to those? The moment I am, I'm in the state of empathy. My boundaries are open. You and I become one. When you and I become one, we move from debate to dialogue. You share what you really feel. I share what I really feel. Learning accelerates. And then the fourth question is, am I externally open? Am I willing to be an equal with you in the process of learning and co-creating a mutual future? Now, the moment I answer those questions, I instantaneously shift my state of being. Suddenly, I'm functioning at a very different level. And I have influence, moral influence, that I didn't have before. It's not about authority. It's about influence without authority. Managers have authority, and they tell people what to do. Leaders transcend authority. They still have the authority, but that's not what they use. They use influence, and they inspire and move people into new places. Most organizations are dying because they have managers they call leaders, but they're not really leaders, right? And so the fundamental state of leadership always puts you in a new place. You can see where the system's going and what we need to do to get there.
What are some exercises that people can be doing during this time you mentioned as far as discovering kind of your purpose? Anything that's helpful? It's hard work if you've ever sat down with a blank sheet of paper and tried to come up with kind of your overall purpose, but anything that you've found that's been helpful and would be helpful?
Yes, there's many things we can do. One exercise is to list the 10 best things that ever happened to you and the 10 worst things that ever happened to you. And then ask the question, what has life prepared me to do that no one else can do? Now, that's really an interesting exercise, because if you list the 10 best, that feels really good. But you get halfway through the second list and you're depressed, right? All these terrible things that happened to you. But then you ask that magical question, what has life prepared me to do? No, suddenly, the 10 terrible things are transformed. I've now had 20 significant life experiences that have shaped me. And I therefore have capacity that's unique. So what's my contribution? What are my strengths? What can I give away? And who do I want to give them away to? Because a purpose is not ego-based. The purpose is contribution-based, right? And so how do I want to spend my life here? And how can I clarify that purpose so that every decision I make is aligned with the purpose? Now, the moment you go there, you go to a different life. You live differently than the conventional person. You can list your successes. You know, what have been your successes in life? And what have those successes had in common? Were you acting individually or collectively? Were you in this role or that role? Were you, there's a fingerprint there. And what is that fingerprint, if you can distill it from across those experiences, what does that tell you about what you're like at your best? And how does that fit into your purpose? Now, the process of finding purpose, I have a friend, Nick Craig, who's done 15,000 people helping them find their purpose. And he says his purpose is to wake you up and bring you home. And I really like that. The moment you find what your purpose really is, it's as if you've woken up. You can now see things you couldn't see 5 minutes ago. And it's like coming home. It's like someplace you're incredibly comfortable. This is who I really am. Most people never have that experience. But once you have it, everything changes. So if a coronavirus hits and all of a sudden you're locked into your house, you can be bored to death, or you can be asking, what's my life purpose? And what can I do with this house today that's going to further that purpose? Robert Fritz said, when you know the answer to the question, what result am I going to create? If you feel good, you pursue your purpose. If you feel bad, you pursue your purpose. That is, once you have a purpose, you're constantly pursuing it, and it doesn't matter your emotional state, because as you pursue it, your emotional state is going to turn positive. And that's a very, very powerful notion, and it's at the very heart of leadership. Leadership is not about knowledge and skills. The entire industry, bookshelves full of leadership books, and all about, here's the knowledge and skills you need to be like Jack Welch. And the only problem is you're not Jack Welch. That's not who you are. And if you pretend to be Jack Welch, you're going to be inauthentic, and you're not going to have that influence. Leadership is about influence. If you pursue your purpose, you'll develop knowledge and skills you need to be who you are. That's way, way far away from all those leadership books we read.
Mm-hmm. I know I've heard you say that there's a danger of trying to be an expert on everything. Talk a little bit about that. I think as people are in new leadership roles, sometimes you want to be that subject matter expert on everything and have the answer to everything. Talk a little bit about that.
There's a reason for that. That is, from the time we were born, we knew when you were 3 years old, you knew it was better to be on top of a hierarchy than on the bottom. You know, you said, I'll be the father, I'll be the general, whatever game you were playing, right? And the thing that gets us there is knowledge, expertise. We go to school to gather knowledge. If we pass the test, we graduate. If we have the right credentials, we get the job. And the first day in an MBA program, first 5 minutes, you immediately discover that everything's about looking smart. So you spend the next 2 years pretending you know everything. And it's an enormously insecure situation. And then a terrible thing happens. You get a job, the big corporation. And they worship the same God, the God of knowing, not the God of learning, the God of knowing. And you pretend to know everything. And that's where all your expertise, that's where all your authority comes from, all your power, all your promotions. I was interviewing a CEO who was a brilliant financial mind. So he went up the financial silo in record time, and he became CEO of a very large company. He was there 11 years. The last 10 years were spectacular. First year was a disaster. He was almost fired. And the reason he was almost fired is he used his authority, told people what to do, and nothing happened. It's a violation of that theory he's learned so well. But in big organizations, you tell people what to do and they nod their head, go back to their desk, and nothing happens. And it was very difficult for him. And then one day, two people said to him, if there's a vision in this company, we don't know what it is. And he was furious with them. They were suggesting he was the problem. And then the next day, he was talking to Wall Street analysts. And the analyst said, I don't see any vision in this company. Now that was devastating. He was just destroyed. And he didn't believe in vision. He didn't believe in people, purpose, or culture. He believed in economics and power and authority. And he went through a crisis. He came to a new view of reality, a much fuller view. And the next 10 years were spectacular. It was a night and day change. Now, at the end of the interview, he said, I can look at my problems from year one, and I can boil them down to one single word. The word was expert. I needed to be the expert. That's what it means to be a CEO. He said, when I overcame that, I began to lead. That's a very important notion, because in this society, we worship knowledge. We don't worship learning, we worship knowledge. And that leads us into some very big traps, especially for people of authority, people in hierarchies. And so we just keep, we act on what we know, and we keep reproducing the past, and the organization goes into slow death. And no one knows what to do about it. They just keep reenacting the past.
Talk a little bit about developing a positive organization. You know, a lot of people, when they're first starting out in leadership, they don't have the influence as far as to affect the whole organization. They're maybe given a small group of people that they're leading to start out with. How can somebody impact a group of people, maybe a handful of people, to make it more positive? And what are some things that you found that's helpful?
Yeah. In the year 2000, Kim Cameron and Jane Dutton and I founded the field of positive organization scholarship. And it was based on the question, what do people, groups, and organizations look like at their very best? Now, that was revolutionary. So for the last 20 years, we've been inundated with studies in that new field, and we've learned an enormous amount about moving from conventional practices to moving to excellence. Now, I give talks all over the world. The single most frequent question that I'm asked is, I really like these ideas of positive leadership and building a positive culture and an excellent company. I just love them. But I'm trapped. You see, I'm just a nobody at the bottom of this hierarchy. I'm in I'm a teacher in a school and the principal doesn't listen to me. You know, or I work, you know, I'm in the military. No one listens to you in the military. I'm in, fill in the blank. That is, everywhere I go, that question is asked, and it's a self-disempowering question. It's an honest question. That's what they feel, is that question. It's a driving question, but it's a self-disempowering question because they're absolutely certain. They're not, there's no doubt. They're absolutely certain that they're powerless, right? That's the starting point. So that means you are. And yet, there are exceptions to the rule. We find people who are in the same role, same low position, in the same company, and they're not without influence. Now, if that's true, if there's 100 people in your role in your company, and one of them has power, has influence, that's an exception, and you're going to reject it because, oh, that's because she has blonde hair, whatever it is. But that exception is the path to excellence. And that exception is crucial because if we can learn from excellence, we can find the way there. Now, let me come out of the abstract and just give you a very concrete example. I know a woman who went to work in a big company, and in the higher echelons of that company, there was not a single woman. It was all men. The customer base was more than 50% women. And the women who did work there at the lower echelons were deeply troubled by their daily experiences. And so they asked if she could help. So they gathered data showing what it was like, what the customer base was like, the kinds of decisions that got made that weren't good decisions because of it, what it was like statistically to be a woman in that company. And they took it to a person at the second echelon, who was very powerful, and they presented. And he was very respectful. You know, oh, I understand these things. Thank you very much. Of course, nothing happened. Now, every woman in that group was devastated, and they all came to the same conclusion. They were powerless, and there was nothing they could do. The same conclusion that millions of others make every day. This woman didn't come to that conclusion. She said, oh, we're just getting started. What she did next was very interesting. She interviewed every woman in the company. She asked them to share their most poignant experience at work, their greatest pain, their greatest success and joy. And she consolidated all of that in her mind and heart. And then she prepared to go back to the same person with the same set of slides, but this time with the stories. And she was just about to go when she decided to take one more step. She went to the one woman who told the most devastating story. And she said, I want you to come with me and tell the story. Oh, I couldn't do that. I want you to come with me and tell the story. This is how we're going to change the organization. So she dragged the woman with her. They met with the same person. And this time she took them, that person, through story after story after story. So here's the statistic and here's the story. What do you think about that? She engaged them. What do you think about this story? What do you think about these feelings? Then she had this woman stand up and tell her story. The man said, would you two go with me and meet with the CEO? Which they did. And dramatic changes happened in that company. Now that's a profoundly important story. Here's a powerless woman, just like all the other women. Except she's not powerless. She's an agent of change. She has influence. Now, if she can do that, you and I can do it. And we say, no, we can't. We don't know how to do that. That's right. What she did was outside the norms. Right. What she did was she was learning in real time how to change that company because she was living in purpose. That's what leaders are. And the moment we say, yeah, but I'm at the bottom, how can I possibly do anything? We're dead. That's the wrong question. The right question is, what result do I want to create? If I want this company to change, if I want my boss to change, now how do I effectively do that? My first thoughts are always ineffective thoughts. I've got to do some hard work to make it happen.
I heard you talk about a study that you did about a school district. I think it was in Ohio, where mm-hmm. you went and studied the top 1% of teachers or group. Talk a little bit about that, kind of the impact that they had and what you saw and observed and people that made a difference.
If you measure performance and you select the top 1% of any large group, you're going to find some very interesting people. I knew before I ever left Ann Arbor to go to Ohio. Now, what we had access to was the top 1% of all the teachers in Ohio by objective measure. I knew before I ever went there, because these were school teachers who walk on water, right? You send your kid to fourth grade. They come home in June doing seventh grade work. They advance 3 years in 1 year. That's impossible, right? So these are teachers who do miracles. And it's not just your kid, it's every kid in the room. So this is something that can't exist. This is something that can't be real. Now, I knew before I left Ann Arbor, these were not school teachers. What were they? They were transformational leaders. Now, if you called them that, they'd have a heart attack. But that's what they were. Now, what did we find? We found people who didn't have jobs. They didn't have careers. They had callings. They were there for a very high purpose, and it wasn't about them. It was about the students. They didn't teach math or history or English. Math or history or English was an excuse to be in relationship with the students. The objective was not to pass a test. The objective was to acquire the love of learning. Because when my student acquires the love of learning, they're empowered for the rest of their lives. And so I'm not here to do what the other teachers are here to do, that is to take content and put it in the brain and give a test to see if it's memorized. I'm here to transform the lives of these students. Those interviews were spectacular in terms of inspiration. Every single interview was inspiring. Why? Because they're not operating from knowledge and authority of the role of school teacher. They're operating from the notion of the future and of you realizing your potential, and they know how to do that. So when they talk to someone like me, I'm sitting there with my mouth open. That was an incredibly educational study. Now, I want to say again, that study is not about school teachers. That's about whoever you are, wherever you are, in terms of influence. It's about leadership. But it's not the way we normally think about leadership.
Join us again next week for part two of our conversation with Bob Quinn as we continue the conversation around purpose-driven leadership. Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.